You can count on me like 1, 2, 3, I'll be there. And I know when I need it, I can count on you.
I'll be there too. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Roy Moore, Alabama's Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate special election on Tuesday, did not concede the race to his Democratic opponent, Doug Jones, on Tuesday night after the media called the race for Jones with about a 1.5 percentage point lead. As it currently stands, Jones is up over Moore in Alabama's unofficial results by some 21,000 votes, according to the state's paper ballot computer tabulators. And there are almost 23,000 write-in votes to be processed as well. According to the Alabama Secretary of State's website just before airtime today, here's Moore's election night announcement that he would not be conceding, at least immediately, to Doug Jones.
Realize when the vote is this close that it's not over. And we still got to go by the rules about this recount provision. But we also know that God is always in control. You know, part of the problem with this campaign is we've been painted in an unfavorable and unfaithful light. And that's what we've got to do, is wait on God and let this process play out. I know it's late. We can't wait and have everybody wait till after 11 o'clock. But the votes are still coming in, and we're looking at that. May God bless you as you go on. May He give you a safe journey. And thank you for coming tonight. It's not over, and it's going to take some time. Thank you.
Well, while Moore waits on God, the state of Alabama will be canvassing the computer-reported results of the election, with votes thankfully cast on hand-marked paper ballots across the state, though tabulated by oft-failed and easily manipulated computer tabulators. As to the possibility of a recount of those paper ballots, as Moore alluded to there, well, Alabama's state law states that recounts amount to running the same paper ballots through the same computer systems, which either counted them correctly or incorrectly in the first place, and who knows, unless humans are allowed to examine the paper ballots, they'll just go right back through those computers again. But the state only pays for a so-called recount if the margin is 0.5% or less, the margin between the two candidates. Well, on CNN last night, shortly after the media had declared the apparent winner of the race as Doug Jones, and after Jones had given his victory speech and Moore chose not to concede, which, by the way, actually has no legal meaning either way, the Alabama Secretary of State, John Merrill, was asked about whether Moore would be entitled to a recount. Here's Secretary of State Merrill's response.
There's always a chance of a recount because any candidate can ask for a recount, and if they pay for it, they can receive a recount.
That is, in theory, true, but not necessarily in Alabama. While I support any candidate asking for a so-called recount, in particular a hand count examining the paper ballots by actual human beings, which does not appear to be an option at all in Alabama, the Secretary of State appears to have been wrong about any candidate being allowed to ask for a recount as long as he or she pays for it. After Moore's announcement and Merrill's statement on CNN, UC Irvine election law professor Rick Hassan noted at his election law blog that examining the statute regarding recounts in Alabama reveals that only those, quote, with standing to contest the election under two particular sections of the law may ask for or receive a count, presuming that they pay for it. Now, under those two sections of the Alabama Code, Hassan notes that they do not allow candidates, interestingly enough, for federal office in Alabama to request such a recount or to contest the election. The ones who can contest an election are, from the statute here, any person declared elected to the office of governor, secretary of state, auditor, treasurer, attorney general, commissioner of agriculture, public service commissioner, senator or representative in the state legislature, justices of the Supreme Court, and so on and so forth, but not those who are running for federal office. Unless there's a provision I'm not seeing, Hassan wrote, Moore cannot get a recount if it is outside the 0.5% margin. And while he says Moore could ask for the U.S. Senate to conduct some kind of contest there, Hassan notes, good luck with that. When Hassan noted this discrepancy and asked why Alabama's Secretary of State John Merrill had still not corrected what appears to be an inaccurate information that he gave to CNN on Tuesday night, incredibly enough, Merrill simply blocked Hassan on Twitter. Hassan is a very well-respected and off-sited election law expert. Asked about all of this by an Alabama newspaper today, Merrill said, well, if we need advice or counsel on this matter, we'll be seeking it from attorneys and judges in the state of Alabama, not attorneys and judges in the state of California. But that wasn't the first peculiar move that Merrill, a Republican, and the state's chief election officer carried out this week. As we've been reporting on the broadcast, he also went to the state Supreme Court late on Monday night to reverse a lower court ruling in response to a suit by a group of multi-partisan election integrity advocates who were seeking to force the state of Alabama to retain electronic ballot images created by the state's paper ballot computer scanners, that in hopes that the public might be able to oversee the results of this election somehow, since the state only allows recounts by the same computers that counted them in the first place, and frankly makes it impossible for anyone to actually examine the actual paper ballots cast in the election. Joining us now to discuss all of this is Chris Sauter. Presumably, he has not yet been blocked on Twitter by Alabama's Secretary of State. He is a longtime election attorney and university professor. He was an early advisor to some guy named Barack Obama and another guy named Bernie Sanders, among others. He literally wrote the book on election recounts with 1994's The Recount Primer, considered by many as a definitive guide to election disputes. He worked on behalf of Democrats on Al Gore's 2000 recount in Florida, Al Franken's 2008 recount in Minnesota, among others. And he's currently an adjunct professor at American University, where he teaches courses on constitutional and election law, including one entitled The Recount Process. He's just back in D.C. today after several days in Alabama working on that lawsuit. To try to get the state to retain ballot images. Chris Sauter, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Great to have you here. First, I want to get just sort of your general thoughts on Tuesday's reported and fairly slim apparent win for the Democrat Doug Jones over Roy Moore in deep, deep red Alabama.
Well, the Jones campaign figured out a way how to make the Obama coalition work in Alabama. The three key pieces of the Obama coalition are minorities, especially African-American voters, millennials, and suburban women. Mm-hmm. And obviously there are other pieces, but those are the three largest pieces of that coalition. And Jones exceeded Obama's 2012 percentages. Mm-hmm. He got about a third of the white vote, and that was primarily suburban women, and he did very well with millennials. The turnout was unusually high for a special election, in excess of 40%, when they were projecting somewhere between 20 and 25%. So Alabama, it was a lot like Virginia in November.
Mm-hmm. A couple weeks
when,
ago.
When handicappers were predicting it would be a very close election, and in fact, the Democrat won for governor by 9 points, and Democrats erased a 32-seat margin in the state state house. Mm-hmm. So that might qualify as a trend. I guess we'll see what happens in the next round, but it was a campaign that was well executed. They had a good ground game. They had a good candidate. They had a solid message, and they had a flawed opponent. And all of those, I think, usually add up to a very competitive race,
well,
a very competitive candidate.
And clearly he did well, no matter what the final reports are, final results are. In fact, Donald Trump had won in Alabama in November of 2016 by some 28 points. So even a 1.5-point win for a Democrat statewide in Alabama seems remarkable. Now, Chris, I realize that we can't know unless paper ballots are actually examined by human beings, but you've worked on a lot of high-profile recounts over the years on behalf of Democrats. Should Moore be allowed such a count if he wants one in Alabama? And do you see any possibility that the ultimate results could somehow change in his favor with such a count?
Well, one of the things I've observed, and I've been doing recounts now since the 1984 House recount in Indiana that was ultimately decided by 4 votes, still the closest U.S. House race in modern times. One thing I've observed is that in the heart of the narrowly defeated candidate lies the belief that he actually won, or at least the hope that a recount will somehow salvage a victory. And it's another way of describing denial in an election that is heartbreakingly close to the loser. That's because they put in so much time and energy, and in this case, they clearly thought they were going to win. But nonetheless, my experience is with this kind of margin, this is not anywhere close to being close enough for a recount. The recounts that I consider to be close are those that are where the margin is a few hundred votes or less. So my guess is what will happen is they'll wait till the rest of the overseas votes come in, and they count the provisional ballots, and there's the canvas, and to see whether or not there were any major errors, and there are always errors in tabulation. In every single close election that I've been involved in, there have been errors. Usually errors tend to cancel one another out, more or less. So I would expect in the end that he throws in the towel. Another one of my experiences is that money is the driving factor that pushes a losing candidate out of the race, that convinces he or she that a recount is not worth it. And it's hard for me to imagine the national Republicans throwing more good money after a bad situation in a recount.
True, so, though they do have an incentive, Chris, to try to delay this as long as they possibly can, to delay Doug Jones' seating.
Yeah, they did do that with Franken.
Yeah.
But the Minnesota statute was a special statute that allowed the seat to be vacant during a contest. And I'm not aware that Alabama has a similar statute. My understanding is that once certification occurs, and that's a mandatory function. It's not discretionary. If somebody is certified as a result of a canvas, and once the candidate has a valid certification, he can take that to the Senate, and the Senate will seat that candidate, except in extraordinary circumstances, which don't seem to exist here. So I don't really see that scenario happening, but stranger things have happened.
Yes, especially in this Senate with Mitch McConnell in charge. Now, it looked like We covered this in some detail, Chris Sauter. It looked like a win for your multi-partisan lawsuit that was filed earlier in the week, seeking ballot images to be retained by the state of Alabama. It was a win the day before the election, but after winning that order to retain all such digital images so that citizens could examine the results, Secretary of State John Merrill went to the state Supreme Court later that day and got a last-minute emergency stay on that order, didn't even allow the plaintiffs to respond before the order was issued, which, you know, resulted in those ballot images being destroyed, I guess, on Election Day. It seems incredibly unusual to me. I'm not an attorney, but that plaintiffs were not allowed to respond in that case at the state Supreme Court. Why were you and the plaintiffs not allowed to respond at all? What happened there, Chris?
Well, it was extraordinary. I want to just go back to the other point about Moore's ability to get a recount.
Yeah.
I do think that Rick Hasson's theory is correct, that the statute allows recounts in those races that are where the margin is over 0.5%, paid for by the candidate, only in those cases where it's not a federal race.
Right.
And they may have misread exactly what the Constitution says or what the case law is.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the Supreme Court has ruled that if a state has a recount that allows federal candidates to have the races reviewed,
mm-hmm.
that doesn't prevent that machinery from happening. It was a case called Harkey versus Rodebush. But in this case, the statute seems to preclude that, and that would mean, as you pointed out, that would mean that they would have to contest the election, or Moore would have to contest the election in the United States Senate. The Senate rarely gets involved. They did not get involved in the Franken Coleman race, for example. The last time I remember was Mary Landrieu, and I believe it was 1996, won a 10,000 vote race, and there were allegations of voter fraud, and they took a look at it and declined to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, the only one I remember was 1974, when the margin coming out of a New Hampshire Senate election was 2 votes.
Mm.
And the U.S. Senate couldn't resolve how disputed ballots would count, and so they ordered a new election. But we're talking about margins way, way less than this.
It's about 22,000 votes, and Moore was talking about overseas military votes. There's only apparently about 8,000 Alabamians enlisted and serving overseas. So even if he won them all,
right.
It seems incredible. But going back to that lawsuit at the state Supreme Court, yeah.
Yeah, so we filed the lawsuit late last week, and it was set down for a hearing on Monday morning. And both sides were present. Both sides were given an opportunity to present evidence and argue in the court. The trial court entered a number of findings,
mm-hmm.
Including that the laws that require the digital images to be preserved, that there was very little argument about that. In other words, the state didn't put up much of a fight
mm-hmm.
On that point. Rather, the state tried to argue that it was not really within their authority or their ability to make sure that ballot images were preserved.
Mm-hmm.
We made the argument that they send out directives to county election officials all the time. They have an Alabama election manual that is over 500 pages that describes virtually every kind of administrative action that locals could and should take.
Mm-hmm.
So it was obviously disingenuous for them to make that argument, and the court didn't buy that. The court only seemed to be interested in whether or not this would present some kind of financial burden on local governments or the state. The Secretary of State's lawyer conceded that the costs would be nominal. So given that kind of evidence that was presented, it was no surprise that the court issued an order that the Secretary of State's office instruct county election officials to preserve the digital ballots.
And that's all the Secretary of State had to do. He was just ordered to send out a notice saying flip that switch to turn on those digital images, right? That was all he was asked.
That's correct. Yeah. And there's really no legitimate reason not to do that. As I said, it costs virtually nothing, and it takes very little effort. It's a matter of just flipping a switch. Nonetheless, the Secretary of State's office decided to fight that order, and they went into the Supreme Court with what is called a mandamus action. It is possible to, under extraordinary circumstances, to get an order, a mandamus order. But in this case, in my opinion, the Supreme Court should have, but did not, allow for both parties to make the arguments. And in fact, looking at the timing of when the order was entered, which was about 5:20,
right,
and the time that we received their documents, which was just a few minutes before 5, I got the feeling that they pushed the send button on their way into the chambers. So yeah, they could tell the chief judge, who was the one that heard it apparently, that they had notified us.
They notified you, but they didn't give you any chance to get there and respond. And that seems, you said it was extraordinary that they didn't. Why wouldn't they? I mean, do you have any sense of what was actually going on here?
Well, I don't want to speculate.
Yeah.
They did indicate in their order that their order does not moot out our case. I feel pretty confident that we will prevail in some way and be able to have our day in court in order to get a permanent injunction, which was initially scheduled for December 21st,
mm-hmm,
but which has been postponed given these circumstances.
But what good, now, Chris, what good does having this hearing, I mean, it won't moot out the case, I guess, but it seems to moot out the issue, at least for the Senate election, because
Well, it does for the Senate
late.
Election, but
yeah.
Our cause is to preserve digital ballots. As it turned out, the election doesn't, there are a couple of reasons why digital ballots should be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I should explain a little bit what they are. The technology in voting has been changing quite a bit in the last 40 years,
mm-hmm,
and especially in the last 20 years.
Right.
There are and were voting equipment known as optical scan equipment, which,
mm-hmm,
is sort of the parent of digital scan equipment,
mm-hmm,
in which a paper ballot is fed through a optical scanner. And it's the paper ballot, in that case, which is counted. The advantage of that is that if there is a dispute, you have the paper ballots. A digital scanner creates a digital record or file of those ballots. And in effect, what you have are two originals of the ballot, because mm-hmm, it is the digital copy which is tabulated by the digital
mm-hmm
machine. Now, why is that important? Well, it's important because it provides an important safety, security, if you will. Let me give you a couple of examples.
And actually,
during the Frank and Coleman recount, there was a bag of ballots that was misplaced,
mm-hmm,
or lost. It was not found during the recount in one of the precincts in Minneapolis, and we weren't able to recount that one precinct with accuracy through a hand recount. And in that recount, 3 million paper ballots were counted by hand.
Mm-hmm.
Had we had this more modern technology, the digital technology, we could have gone to the digital scanner and determined what the real count was. There's also, frankly, issues of whether or not results have been manipulated, that a second set of ballots will provide. And in some cases, some states, these digital ballots are being put online so that the public can review those ballots and do the counting themselves.
That seems
That
seems key here, because thinking about Roy Moore, if he were to somehow be able to get a count at this point, it would be nice if the public was able to see those ballot images, because who knows how long it will take before a recount actually occurs, if it occurs. And if ballots are swapped in some fashion between here and there, it's something that Alabama Governor Don Siegelman has argued happened in his race.
Right.
If somehow those ballots are swapped, there's really no way for the public to know whether that has happened or not.
That's correct. I suspect if something like that were to happen at this point, it wouldn't be received very well, and then you would have a Senate investigation. In the Siegelman case, it happened on election night. It was more like a Lyndon Johnson 1948 election, where they were able to, it appears, manipulate the results before they were, sort of finally posted.
Right.
So, and also that election was a lot closer than this one.
Right. It was easier to do that. Chris, I got to get out here, but I want to just ask you very quickly, do you plan to, A, continue that fight? I think you've already mentioned that you plan to continue it in Alabama, but do you plan to continue it? I know you've been working with our friend, a longtime election transparency champion, John Brakey, on this issue. Are you guys going to move to other states beyond Alabama to try to assure that digital images, where the systems allow them, will be retained as we go into these 2018 primaries and the key 2018 midterm elections?
Well, in Alabama, the answer is yes. We hope to establish that digital ballots will be preserved for the 2018 elections. And John Brakey founded this movement, if you will, or co-founded it in Arizona, and he is expanding his organization so that it can begin to move in other states. But I have to say, this action was initiated by Alabama voters, and we provided, and the council in this case, council of record, was an Alabama lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
We provided consulting backup, but I think that we're hoping that will be the approach, that we will take the Alabama model and help voters and election attorneys in various states to initiate this on their own, so that they can have ownership of it, and it's not people from the outside who are trying to do this. So that's the goal, and I hope that we continue to be successful, and that one of the things I will say, as a result of this, the Supreme Court has made our effort, has elevated the effort as a result of their action.
The Alabama Supreme Court.
Yeah, the Alabama Supreme Court. Many more people now know about digital ballot images than would have had they not stayed our temporary restraining order in our case in Alabama. So we appreciate that.
Well, yeah, we'll take that, I guess. And that I know that there, you had a favorable ruling along these lines in Arizona. Hopefully you'll get one in Alabama. And will those, by the way, even though they're state court decisions, do they serve as a precedent in other states where challenges might happen?
Not as a controlling precedent. There are some states, including New York, and now Arizona has codified it, that have state statutes that require preservation of digital ballots. And that's another way to go.
Mm-hmm.
If there's ever a more favorable Congress, by favorable I mean a Congress that's more in tune with voting rights and voting integrity than the current one, then it would be great to see Congress pass a law that requires the digital ballots be preserved in all states.
Any additional transparency we can get seems like a good idea at this point.
You've got that right, Brad. Well, thank you for having me on.
I appreciate it, Chris. Chris Sauter, really appreciate your time here and your efforts in Alabama, and hope you'll continue the fight all across the country as we march into 2018. Thanks a bunch, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, a quick break, and we're back with a few odds and ends here regarding this election in Alabama, such as it is at the moment. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with that. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast.